TCJ Radio International presents Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
We're in a suburb outside the Swiss federal capital, Bern. The church bell we just heard in the background, maybe. This is a lovely spot, a beautiful, warm, sunny day, and I'm sitting with someone at her home I've known for a number of years, quite a number of years. I think we must be talking at least perhaps 15 years, Heidi?
15, yes, 15
Something
years.
Like 15 years. She has had a tremendous checkered career, has been all over the place doing many, many things, a fascinating person. I'm speaking of Heidi Blunier-Weibel. Heidi, you are a native of the Bern area, but as a younger woman, you went to Hollywood, you experienced the glamour of Hollywood, you worked in the film industry there, you spent many years in that industry, you even created a new function called dubbing supervision, a dubbing supervisor. You worked there, you have to tell us about that. And then all of a sudden, at one point, you decided to come back to Switzerland. You went through a difficult transition, readjusting to this culture. It was like a cultural shock for you to come back to your own country after so many years in glamorous Hollywood. And then finally, and today, you are specialized in gerontology. You were the first woman in the canton or state of Bern to get an official diploma as a gerontologist. Now, this is quite a bit of area that you've covered over the years. Let's go back to the Hollywood days. Now, how did a young woman from Bern find her way to Hollywood in the first place?
We emigrated in 67. I was married to a Swiss man who had several members of his family had already been to America, and it was sort of in the family that you go to America. And I, of course, was all gung-ho for it. I always liked to travel, and I went with him, and we went to New York. We had no jobs. We could hardly speak English, and only after 3 years we went to California. And actually, I had no idea what I would do in Hollywood. I also had a young child, and I got a second one, and it all started with the International Film Festival in Hollywood. I made announcements of foreign films in about 20 languages. I just learned one sentence of each language.
To introduce the film, basically?
To introduce the film, yes. And William Friedkin heard me, and he came up to me and he said, "Oh, I need someone like you who speaks all the languages." I'm in the middle of doing the foreign version, the German version of Exorcist 1. And I'm dealing with Bernard Wicki and all these Germans, and I don't know what they're saying. Could you please come and translate for me? So I did. And I enjoyed it tremendously. This was really fascinating. And he enjoyed it too. And he said, "Oh, Heidi, couldn't you go to Germany with Bernard Wicki and supervise him?" And I don't know if anybody...
To supervise the dubbing of the film, right?
Yes. Yeah. I don't remember if anybody... Or I don't know if anybody still remembers Bernard Wicki. He was quite a famous director, not a dubbing director. He was a film director.
A Swiss name too, isn't it? Wicki.
Yeah, he is. He's actually Swiss. Mm-hmm. So I went to Munich and worked with him, and everybody said how difficult he is as a director. But we really got along very well. It took a very long time. This German version of The Exorcist took as long as it usually takes to make a whole film, mm-hmm. because he's such a perfectionist. But it was fantastic. It's really a wonderful dubbing, but because of him, he had these ideas, like if someone had to dub a soldier, he made the actor put on the helmet, stuff like that.
It was real perfection then.
It was really perfectionist.
Yeah. almost esoteric, you know. Yeah. If you're wearing a helmet, you'll feel like a soldier and sound like one. But so what you're talking about is what's also called lip sync, you know, when you have different versions. In the old days, you just had subtitles that you had to read. You got the original sound, and then you read the translation underneath. But over the years, and I know Germany did a lot of pioneering work in that direction, they're quite good at it, where they actually had the actors dubbed by someone else off screen, speaking the lines, but in the foreign language, in this case German. And it's done so well, with such perfection, that sometimes you can hardly tell it's not the original language. This is what you were into. This is what you were doing.
Your saying was done so well. Most people say it was done so badly. And for a long time...
Until you came along.
For a long time it was done badly. It was just sent to the foreign countries and somebody took care of it and didn't look at the original and didn't try to do lip sync or to choose the right actors who really came across like the person that you saw on.
It became a real art with time.
Art, yes.
After you got involved with it, yeah.
And of course Friedkin was a perfectionist and he started this. Mm. He overlooked it and he wanted it to be perfect. And so when I came home with the German version, it was really good. And he said, don't you speak French? And I said, yeah. Why don't you go to France? And so I supervised somebody who had done at least 50 films before. He was very sour to have me.
Especially a Swiss telling the French how to speak French.
The French, what was wrong and so on. And then after the French, but he was good. He was good. So it was a good version too. And then Friedkin said, you speak Italian, don't you? Why don't you go to Rome? And from then on, I was a dubbing supervisor.
So you were traveling back and forth to all these movie capitals.
All the time. Yeah. Like sometimes I went to Rome just to listen to one version for 2 hours from California.
All that way and then back again.
Yeah, but the thing was that when I arrived, it wasn't ready. The Italians hadn't gotten it.
That sounds typical somehow.
The grandmother was ill and the son had broken his leg and so on. Yeah. So it wasn't ready. And I just said, I'm not going to sit here until you are ready to work. I go back home. Call me when you're done.
Uh-huh.
So...
So you did German and French and Italian supervision.
And Spanish sometimes, but I don't speak Spanish well. But it's important to know the language because that was, I don't know if you want me to describe what the whole thing was all about.
You're entitled to say anything you want. We're all fascinated to hear more details about this work.
Because there are so many different things that are important in dubbing. First of all, it's the text. You have to have a fantastic text that gives the original meaning and
the translation has got to be just perfect, but the time has got to fit too, right?
The timing has to fit, and the labials and the pauses and so
breaths
on.
Even they have
breaths.
To be synchronous.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's excruciatingly frustrating sometimes, isn't it? It sometimes takes hours and hours just to do a few lines in some difficult scenes.
Sometimes, yes, on dubbings that. Someone is supervising and it really cares. But if you look at things dubbed on television, they don't have the money to work so long on it, and they do it real fast, and then sometimes it's totally
quick and dirty
off.
As they say. Yeah.
It's totally off, but it bothers me like hell, of course, because I'm used to better. And then the selection of voices, that's also very important, that you find a person who fits in the body.
They didn't always do that, but today it's so refined that if you listen to a German language dubbing, or the other languages too, if you have Sean Connery, who's a well-known actor, the voices they find to do the dubbing actually sound very much like Sean Connery. It's very authentic.
But that's very important. Yeah. I once started a whole version again, because they were using in Germany the wrong person to do the man in the film. It just turned into a different film because the guy that they chose first of all, he didn't look like him. He was very skinny, and the person in the film was a bigger person.
You get Orson Welles with this magnificent voice, and you get a little squeaky guy. It just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. So he had to do the whole thing again.
How many films did you supervise? How many did you produce?
Oh, maybe 30. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were some of the titles that we'd all recognize?
Well, I did all the Star Wars films, the first ones, the three, and then all of Indiana Jones.
You did them?
Mm-hmm. And then on Golden Pond and The Right Stuff and E.T.
Oh, the German, French and Italian of those?
Yeah. That was actually the biggest production that I had.
And so you knew Spielberg too?
Oh yeah, at the end I only worked for him. Mm. I did all of his films until I came back.
How many people did you, I mean people, big names did you work with in Hollywood then? I mean, quite a few I can imagine.
Well, the biggest, the best known person is of course Spielberg, and then George Lucas. Friedkin was very famous too. George Mandel. Those are maybe the ones that one knows here.
Now, everybody has heard about the legendary life in Hollywood, this glamorous lifestyle and the parties and all this sort of thing. Did that go on? Were you part of that scene?
I had a lot of friends who worked in films, but they were more in production than stars. But of course, we met them too. But it was so normal, Bob. You know, people always ask me, how was it? It was fascinating, but when you're part of it, it's everyday life. It's not so exciting anymore. And some people, some of those famous people were really nice and interesting, and others were very boring. Spielberg is a very intelligent person, and anytime it was wonderful to be with him.
This seems like a silly question, but did you enjoy this work? Did you enjoy this Hollywood lifestyle?
I enjoyed it tremendously. I had the feeling that there's nothing better to be done. I enjoyed every minute in film. I met all over the world. I met interesting people. I was respected, and I liked the work. You know, it was a very creative, artistic work. I had to supervise the directing.
It was a big responsibility you were given.
It was a very, very big responsibility. I made a lot of money. I can say that. I was always in foreign cities. I could shop for the most beautiful clothes, and I was always in great hotels. But the thing that counted the most was the work. It was just interesting.
Well, why, obviously, did you decide to leave all of this? You liked it so much. It was in your blood. You were doing a job that was responsible. You loved what you were doing, and then you decided to come back to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. What happened?
I actually didn't think of leaving the business. I thought that if I live in Switzerland, it would be easier. I wouldn't have to travel that much, because from Switzerland you are in an hour by plane, you are in all those cities that I worked in, London, Berlin, Rome, Paris.
And Hollywood is way, way away, isn't it?
Hollywood, yeah. It was always such a thing, those long trips. And don't forget, I was a mother of three. Mm-hmm. And my children were born during all of this. In between, I gave birth and then I left again. And then I separated from my husband. And I thought that if I would be back in Switzerland, as I said, it would be easier to travel to those places. Mm-hmm. And I would have family around. And the main thing was that I still believed in Swiss schools. I have been a teacher myself, and I thought the schools are 10 times better than in America. That was very important to me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I came back.
Well, you're not doing this work today. So what happened?
What happened is that I got tired of traveling. I had the feeling that I was spending all my life in airports and in hotels. And I'm somebody who likes friends and likes to be in a cozy spot and in a beautiful house. And
some stability.
Family stability.
Yeah. And that's the Swiss, isn't it?
It's true. And I just couldn't get it together here with childcare. I had an au pair, but she didn't know what it was all about to live in Switzerland. Winter came, my kids all had to have skis and equipment, and she didn't know. And I had to run after all these things in between work. And
daycare was not developed at the time.
Not at all. Yeah. It was really terrible. I had a four-year-old child, and I couldn't give her anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So something had to give, and that was you.
It just became too much for me. I remember times when I was cooking with one hand and I was telephoning with the other hand and making deals for $50,000 or something. And in the meantime, my kids were sitting at the table eating and fighting with each other. And I made a movement with my foot to tell them to be quiet because I had no hand left. That's how I felt. I was just stretched in all directions.
But I remember you telling me once that it wasn't very easy for you and also for your daughters to resettle and reintegrate in Switzerland. You had had so much of this very special life in Tinseltown. When you came back here, it was a cultural shock to return to your own country in many ways.
That's true. It was like a second migration. I didn't like it here anymore. The people were boring to me and complicated and I had the feeling that I had so much to offer, and nobody was really interested in what I had done. They all told me, "You have a 20-year hole in your."
They didn't regard what you did as any kind of serious profession.
Because nobody could understand.
Yeah.
I always had to explain for a long time. If you say I'm a dubbing supervisor, nobody has any idea what this is, and. I have a lot of other talents too, and I know languages, and I was a teacher, but I couldn't even go back to teaching because there were too many teachers at the time. So it took me a long time to find a place where I could develop again and also make enough money to raise my children.
This had an impact on the kids too, didn't it?
Yeah. They hated it even more than me because they thought Swiss people are strange to children. They treat them like children, and we are people.
Yeah. One of the negative things that's been said about Switzerland for many years is that it doesn't really promote creativity and artistic creativity, especially because things are looked at in a very functional way. Everything must be done according to a formula, a recipe. It must be identifiable, and people have difficulty here, not always, and I'm sure the situation is changing, but traditionally there's been a difficulty in coming to terms with anything new or different. Very conservative society in that respect.
Well, you said it all.
You agree with it.
I agree with it, and I felt it all over for a long, long time. It was really hard for me to work in a structure because I never had to do that. I was always my own boss, and the Hollywood people trusted me. I mean,
you did your job. They let you do it. That was your way, right?
On the contrary, Spielberg always said to everybody who I worked with, do whatever Heidi says. And do you know how nice this is?
Yes. Makes you feel good, doesn't it?
And you raise above yourself. Yeah. You do the most fantastic things just because you are happy doing it.
Yeah. Well, you did eventually, after some difficult period, I know, find your feet, as they say, and you found new directions to apply your talents. I know that you got into broadcasting, local broadcasting here in Bern. You're still active in broadcasting on one of the local stations. And as we said at the beginning, you were the first woman in the canton or state of Bern to receive a diploma in gerontology. The broadcasting you do a bit as a hobby, don't you, on the side?
Yes, I do, but it's also something that I enjoy tremendously, and I continue doing it even in times when I had work over my ears. I just kept doing it because I enjoyed it. I had my own music show, classical music every Sunday, where I present music with introductions to the composer. To
you like serious music?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. And interviews with musicians. So that that kept me going all the time. This was my artistic side that I could enjoy.
Artistic stimulation and creativity. Now, what about the gerontology? For people who don't know anything about it, it sounds like it doesn't sound exciting. What happened to you there?
What happened to me? I got older. I got older, and my mother too, and I saw the changes that occur to people when they get older, and I saw a lot of things that could be done better, and then I found this school, and it was very interesting. I learned a lot of things about gerontology, and then it is not, I have to explain what I'm doing in gerontology. Mm-hmm. Most of my classmates go back and work in a home or in the hospital. They are nurses or other practitioners, and they they work with old people. I actually do not work with really old people, because I'm giving seminars on becoming older creatively. Mm-hmm. And I deal
in a way counseling. We could say counseling.
Yeah. Well, yes, you could say that. I work with people who are my age. Mm-hmm. And
I mustn't ask your age.
You don't want to know it.
Do you want to volunteer your age?
Yeah, I'm 65.
Nobody would ever guess that.
Anyway, so I find it really fascinating to do these seminars, because they are subjects, we're talking about subjects that interest everybody. I'm employed by SBB, by the Swiss...
Swiss Federal Railroads, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. And I'm giving seminars to their people who go into pension.
Mm-hmm. You sort of get them ready for...
That's right.
For retirement.
For retirement. Yeah. And look at what's going to change in the relationship sometimes with partners.
Very quickly, what are some of the key things that people should be aware of in preparing for retirement?
Okay.
What are the things that always come up?
One thing is, one thing that's very difficult is that you lose your identity up to a certain point when you are not working in the job that you have had for such a long time.
So many people identify with their job. They
Absolutely.
Are their job.
Yeah. Especially men who have done nothing else and concentrated on the job. So it's very important to find your talents and your things that you always wanted to do. That you
another outlet for your talents, really. Something where you can use your talents, but maybe in a different direction.
Yeah, some people have never even noticed that they have talents. And you sort of have to dig them up and do, if you succeed to dig up a talent and do something with it, then you are safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because you still feel an identity. Being active creatively is very good anyway. That makes most people happy.
And you're working for yourself. It's not important who you're working for, but you're doing something that satisfies you and pleases you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
is it true what you hear, incidentally, Heidi, so often, that many tragic cases where people literally die a few months after retirement, one says, because they just don't know what to do with themselves.
Right.
They lose connection with life. They just give up.
Absolutely.
This happens.
It happens very, very often. Mm. And that's why we do these courses. It's important.
Keep busy. And
Keep busy, keep involved, keep everything up that you have done before, physically and spiritually and whatever. Try to be involved with people and with things. And
I realize that retirement is a great new sense of freedom. You can finally do what you really want to do and enjoy your life.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why it's fascinating to work with people, because it's a happy thing. I tell them it's not the rest of your life that you just have to sort of sit around and wait until it's finished. It's a long, long period. For some people it's still 30 years. It's almost as long as you have been working.
And getting longer and longer these days.
And if you do something with it, it can still be a very fascinating time.
Is Switzerland a good place to be retired in? I think of the nature, I think of the the climate here. It seems healthy, lots of things to do. Is it as good as one would imagine?
I think it could be better. Mm-hmm. Couldn't be better. And it's also a good time to become, to grow older, because it's a subject. Everybody is aware of it. Percentage of old people is always higher, and there's so much offered to older people, and even the homes are very beautiful, and people take care of, you can be taken care of.
What would you improve in Switzerland specifically in terms of gerontology, dealing with the senior population? What needs to be done?
I think I would ask them more what they want. There are so many people here who make decisions, political decisions, and decide upon things that one should ask the older generation what they need and what they want.
Well, 65, you're, for most people, at retirement age yourself, but you don't look or sound like somebody who's ready for a rocking chair. On the contrary, where is Heidi going next? What's the next challenge?
Good question. There are so many challenges. I still would like to do so many different things. The one thing that I enjoy tremendously is the radio show that you're doing now with retired people. And I'm the only one who is a little bit professional in there. I still love to do radio programs. And then I'm working for Terre des Hommes right now.
This is a Swiss child welfare organization.
With projects with children all over the world. And I'm organizing now a music festival to raise money.
You certainly sound like you have a lot on your plate, Heidi.
Oh, I didn't tell you. I have a granddaughter.
You too.
That is, of course, the most beautiful
thing.
That's
a very special profession, isn't it?
Yeah, it is just fabulous.
Yeah.
She's so cute.
Yeah. They offer older people they give them a new lease on life. I mean, I've got two grandchildren now.
I'm
seeing children with new eyes. You know, I raised four of my own, and yet the grandchildren are very special, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, they are fantastic.
You get a second try.
Oh, you look at it. You have time to look at the way human beings develop, and it's so interesting because every day there is something new.
Yeah. Do you ever miss Hollywood? Did you dream of going back?
No, I'm not dreaming of going back, but I'm glad you're asking me, because it's starting to be a problem sometimes. I mean, I'm 65 now, and I lived in America for 20 years, and it was such a fantastic time, and I can never talk to anybody about it except to my children. I have one daughter who is also in films now, and she still wants to know everything. But it's just a chapter in my life that I treasure in my heart. And I would very much like to talk to somebody who was in the same situation. And since I'm divorced and I never see my husband, who is still in America, these are just my secrets. And my it's all closed up in me. Nobody is interested in that.
Yeah. Why don't you just pack a bag and go? Just disappear.
It wouldn't be the same anymore. You have to be involved. It's not interesting to go back to America as a spectator.
Yeah. Like being a tourist, you know.
Right now, I wouldn't want to go back there anyway
because
of the political situation.
Well, the whole post 9/11 business has changed the country a great deal, hasn't it?
Yeah. No, I have no desire to go back.
Yeah. Heidi Blunier-Weibel, dubbing supervisor, a pioneer. Profession in the Hollywood film industry, which he did for 20 years, supervising the dubbing or lip-syncing to perfection of the foreign versions of Hollywood films. You've been involved in as a press officer for the Swiss mission to Namibia years ago. We didn't have time to talk about that. The first woman to be diplomat as a gerontologist in the Canton estate of Bern. A broadcaster. We could go down the list, but I think we've heard in the last half an hour, Heidi, something about yourself and shared the enthusiasm for your Hollywood days and for what you're doing now. Thanks so much for being on Switzerland in Sound. From Bern, just outside Bern, for Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
You were just listening to Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti. For more information, go to www.switzerlandinsound.com.